that happens in life can happen in a show. You can make them laugh, you can make them cry. Anything, anything can go.
Welcome to your weekend. This is Weekend Showcase, your North State Arts Magazine. I'm Tom Kinney. Today, we take you to the Blue Room Theater in Chico to hear from the director and two stars from the play Miss Bennet, Christmas at Pemberley, a sequel to Pride and Prejudice. You'll hear how a new romance begins between the shyest of the Bennet sisters and her charming but awkward would-be suitor. You'll also hear from two of the 13 artists showing their creations at Chico's Kosis Studio for a holiday show and sale. That's what's coming up over the next half hour here on Weekend Showcase. Stay tuned. First, here's Brian Mall with the North State Arts Calendar.
Riverfront Playhouse in Reading, Miracle on 34th Street. This heartwarming holiday story plays at 7:30 tonight and tomorrow night, and at 2 o'clock on Sunday. Cascade Theater presents a production of Reading's City Ballet, The Nutcracker. Experience this timeless Christmas classic tonight at 7:30 and tomorrow at both 2 and 7:30. There will be a children's sugar plum tea following tomorrow's matinee performance. Wednesday at the Cascade, world-class guitarist Tommy Emmanuel, along with special guest Jerry Douglas, dazzle the audience with their bluegrass, country, and Celtic music, starting at 7:30. The North State Symphony performs sacred and popular holiday music with special guests, the Shasta College Chorus. Tonight's concert is at St. John's Episcopal Church in Chico, beginning at 7:30. Tomorrow evening, the symphony performs in Red Bluff at the State Theater for the Arts, again beginning at 7:30. Sunday afternoon, the concert moves to the All Saints Episcopal Church in Reading, with a 4 o'clock start time. Opening today at the Orland Arts Center, the exhibit Celebrating the Season. Four artists display their art in a variety of media. Meet these artists at a reception going on right now and lasting till 7. Chico Theater Company presents Annie, the delightful musical full of charm and charisma, with a pugnacious orphan and her pooch. See the show tonight or tomorrow night at 7:30. There's also a Sunday matinee at 2. In Chico State's Laxon Auditorium, Believe, a stage extravaganza inspired by the children's book The Polar Express. It plays tonight and tomorrow night at 7:30, with 2 o'clock matinees both tomorrow and Sunday. Thursday in Laxon Auditorium, the all-female ensemble Celtic Woman brings a concert called The Best of Christmas to the stage with Yuletide songs given a Celtic spin. The music starts at 7:30. This weekend, more music with a Christmas spirit happens at Chico State's Harlan Adams Theater with Glorious Sounds of the Season. Included in the show are the 200 Voice Choral Union, the Symphonic Wind Ensemble, the Children's Choir of Chico, and the University's Centennial Pipe Organ. That's happening tonight and tomorrow night at 7:30 and Sunday at 2. Closing tomorrow at the Janet Turner Print Museum in Chico State's Humanities Building, Deep Etch, Legends of Chico Printmaking. That's tomorrow, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Also in the Humanities Building at CSU Chico, the Jackie Headley University Art Gallery features Legal Gender, the Irreverent Art of Anita Steckel. The gallery is open Tuesday through Saturday, noon to 4. In Yuba City, Baker Street sleuth meets Scrooge in the Acting Company's production Sherlock Holmes and the Case of the Christmas Carol, a unique holiday mystery. The curtain goes up tonight and tomorrow night at 7:30. This Sunday's matinee is sold out. That's the calendar for this week. Today we celebrate the birthday of writer Willa Cather. What was any art, Cather mused, but a mold in which to imprison for a moment the shining, elusive element which is life itself. Life hurrying past us and running away, too strong to stop, too sweet to lose.
I'm at the Blue Room Theater in Chico. Their current production is Miss Bennet, Christmas at Pemberley. It's a sequel to Pride and Prejudice. I have here the director, Amber Miller. Have you been a Jane Austen fan for a long time?
Since college.
What do you think is appealing about Jane Austen?
She's witty. She's fun. It moves well. It's always really funny.
When did you first become aware of the fact that there was a stage sequel to Pride and Prejudice?
About a year ago or so, Joe got a package of different scripts from dramatists, saw that one, and he was very interested in it, gave it a read, thought it was a good fit. I read it, and it was great, so yeah.
How would you say that this is different from Pride and Prejudice? It revolves around another sister.
Yeah, in Pride and Prejudice, Mary maybe has five lines. She's not very present in Pride and Prejudice, and she's really precocious and kind of in an annoying way in Pride and Prejudice. And so it's very clever that she gets to be the heroine because she's kind of come into herself. She's matured. She's had the house to herself. She hasn't had sisters overshadowing her. So she has grown up in these 2 years and kind of became a swan. But a swan and, you know, a librarian coat, they still had a prejudice against her as being Mary of Pride and Prejudice. And so they all saw her become this other thing as well.
Well, by happenstance, a suitor who doesn't know he's a suitor comes onto the scene. Tell me about Arthur.
Arthur, he's been in Oxford all of his life. He's a scholar, socially awkward, lives in books, kind of a loner as well, and so they're very well suited. Fate took a big leap, and he found himself inheriting this huge estate and becoming a lord, and that made him nervous. Like Mary, he lived a very quiet, studious life, and that threw him into meeting Mr. Darcy while Mary was here. So they met, and they were perfect for each other.
It takes both of them a long time to admit how they feel and follow up on how they feel.
Both of them don't have the social experience. They're not naturally gregarious, flirty people. This is the first time they've ever been exposed to any of those kind of feelings, and they don't know how to deal with it, you know.
When I watched the final dress rehearsal, it just was so charming and dear to see these two people kind of come out of their shells and discover themselves and the other person.
It's sweet in the sense that, you know, you do get two people that get out of their cocoon, go from the little ugly ducklings to the swan. There's a lot of those metaphors that they do come into their own. He's coming into his own both as, you know, his birthright, but also as a person. And same with Mary. She thought she was going to have to be a spinster, take care of the family and stuff, and that was her road, and she didn't really think she had a choice, and both of them found a much bigger world.
So again, explain how Arthur has become a lord, because he doesn't seem very comfortable in the role of a lord.
A lot of times a male had to inherit, even though it was Lady Catherine's estate. Anne couldn't inherit because there was a lot of laws at that time where the nearest male heir had to inherit it. So even though she was next in line, Arthur found himself the next male heir, and that's why he inherited it.
I was trying to figure all that out because there's a sort of a forced relationship in the middle of the play between the daughter of Catherine de Bourgh, what's her name?
Anne.
And that becomes the shadow that complicates the plot. But I was trying to figure out, how are they related and how can they be engaged when related like that?
Cousins often married during that time, so that wasn't weird for cousins to marry. If she was born a man, she would have been the one who would have inherited the state from her mother. But again, like I said, because of English custom and law, she couldn't. So she was already kind of, it's like package deal. You know, we're keeping the family intact. We're keeping the Bourgh name. On paper, it would have been a good marriage.
And that was the pronouncement of Catherine de Bourgh, who was the antagonist in Pride and Prejudice. She said, this is what's going to happen. You're going to marry, and then that's how everything will work out. She was a person who never took no for an answer. And her daughter Anne is like her. It's interesting to see Anne become the antagonist just like her mother.
Mm-hmm. That's the same thing that was fun about this script is in Pride and Prejudice, Anne also has maybe one or two lines. She's not really represented, and she's described as very meek and weak. And so the playwright decides to say, well, you know, now that she's not overshadowed by her mother, she steps up and becomes her mother.
So why is this a good play for people to go to for the Christmas season?
Well, it's very Christmassy, so it's lighthearted, but it's very witty. It's family friendly. It has its magical moments, and you know, so I think it's a perfect fit for someone who wants a nice, fun, light Christmas show, but that has depth, that has wit, that has intelligence. Mixes all those up.
And now we have here Fiona Hull. She plays the central character, Mary Bennett. Were you familiar with Pride and Prejudice before this play?
Yes, I was familiar with Pride and Prejudice. I love those books. Most Jane Austen novels I'm a huge fan of. So when I had the opportunity to audition, it was really exciting.
What do you like about Jane Austen?
She's so sweet. I think she's so, like, she's positively just so pleasant. And, like, she's always writing a feel-good story and a love story, obviously. But they're always sweet. And that's what I love most. You feel good when you're reading Jane Austen.
Was it a challenge for you to put yourself in that milieu?
Yeah, I would say it was. Just the formalities and the literal posture, it can be difficult. And also doing a British accent is difficult, but it was worth it and it's fun.
Talk about the journey of Mary, from the Mary she was in Pride and Prejudice and what she transforms into in this play.
She really never had the chance to show her skills and show her personality. I don't really know if she wanted to. And then in this story, she has had the opportunity to, and people are seeing, hey, she's more than just this quiet sister left at home. She has personality. She has a fire in her now. And so it's really cool to see it. It's a little bit of Lizzie in her. If you know from the original book, she has a lot of pride. She's a fascinating character, and she's finally able to branch that out in this.
Does she discover herself in this play?
She discovers herself first, and then along with that, she discovers love, which is like the best of both worlds, in my opinion. So, yeah, I think she found herself.
Do you think she had a feeling that, oh, that life would never be for her?
Yeah, I think the world around her growing up was just not attractive to her, and she wanted to be outside of that, and then with this new person, she's seeing, hey, there's more to life than just what I assume. Now she's like, hey, maybe this could happen to me too.
Talk about this gentleman that comes into the lives of the Bennett family. What is it that makes Mary connect with him so much?
I think what connects Arthur and I is that we're both not like everybody else. And when you find those outcasts in life, you connect with them. They're both outside of these worlds around them, but together they can be one and they can focus together.
Do you think that your character, Mary, is given the courage she didn't think she'd have about going for having a relationship by what her sisters have done, especially Elizabeth? Elizabeth has found this love. Mary says, well, maybe if she can, I can.
I think now that is true, but first and foremost, she just wanted everybody to know that she is an individual just by herself without anybody else, without a love interest. And she just wanted people to know, hey, I have something to say too. And then when this character came in, he let her say that, or at least encouraged it, not necessarily let her. Yeah, she found herself, I think, first and was branching that out before she met Arthur.
How are you making your character different from the character of Elizabeth in Pride and Prejudice?
I think Mary is still more of a prude and more, she's more refined, and Lizzie was very out there. I think Mary's a little more cautious, but that was the whole point of this play, is that she's getting out of that. She doesn't need to be, and she has a voice and she can share it.
I have to say, it's lovely to see both your characters, you and Arthur, kind of discover themselves, come out of their shell, and fight for actually having something in life.
Isn't that what we should be fighting for in the first place? Like a say and a life well lived?
Now I'm here with Gabriel Suddeth. He plays the romantic lead, the male romantic lead of this play. So tell me about Arthur.
Well, Arthur he's an orphan now, a very studious man. I feel like after his parents died, he went to Oxford and just kind of buried himself in his studies. He didn't have much else to do, and he was always kind of a nerdy kid. And so he never really got used to being around people. He was very awkward and shy, and probably any attempts he wanted to make friends, he would just get tongue-tied. So when he was invited to the Pemberley household for Christmas, he was not really sure what to do, but he had known Darcy before. He accepted and came. What happened next was certainly not what he was expecting.
What's it like for you, Gabriel, to play this part that goes from this shy, socially awkward person who seems to make social interaction just a painful thing, into someone who discovers a possibility that he never even had in his mind before?
Honestly, I feel very connected to it. I myself am a little bit socially awkward, and was so more before I started theater. Kind of the way that the whole situation did for Arthur helped me break out of that a little bit and become more of an outgoing sort of personality. I have a very kindred spirit relationship with Arthur in this play.
So what was your process for immersing yourself in the 1800s and this period of Jane Austen?
I got some help with how I should move and sit and stand and all of that.
Have you been in any kind of drawing room comedy like this before? I mean, a comedy where you were in a different period?
No, actually. This is my first, like, really period piece. I mean, I've done Shakespeare, but in that, it was often a modernized version.
What makes this a good play for the holiday season, do you think?
Well, I mean, other than the obvious fact that it takes place around Christmas time, it's a play about, like, love and people coming together under, like, extraneous circumstances. And it's funny, it's cute, it's just a very lighthearted play. It's just a wonderful show for the whole family to come and get together to laugh and cry and have a wonderful holiday.
The play Miss Bennet, Christmas at Pemberley, is at the Blue Room Theater in downtown Chico through the 22nd. It plays Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays at 7:30. And there's a special matinee on the 16th, for which proceeds go to campfire victims.
Thank you. This is Dolores, and today I'm speaking with two of the 13 artists who will be showing at Holiday Fair at the Kosis Studios at 356 East 2nd Avenue in Chico. They're having a sale Saturday 10 to 5, Sunday 11 to 4. I'm speaking with Eva Farley, who's a watercolor artist, and Lauren Mesa, who is a mosaicist, hard to pronounce, and also a ceramic artist. We're going to start with what's been on all of our minds, that is this terrible tragedy in our sister city of Paradise and surrounding areas. Even making art, it's been hard for these artists to not reflect on what has happened.
I've been thinking about how important it is to all of us to surround ourselves with beautiful art. I've talked to friends who have lost everything. Some of the things that they miss the most are the one-of-a-kind art pieces that they've lost.
I should have introduced you, Eva Farley. You had a particular watercolor that you feel you're inseparable from.
I painted a painting of our dog Lucy, who passed away a couple of years ago at 15 and a half. When I was getting my Go box ready, that was the one thing that we couldn't leave without.
Lauren, what are your feelings about making art under these circumstances?
For me, art has always been my go-to place if I'm struggling. Putting a mosaic together, putting lots of little broken pieces together to make a whole has been a very healing thing for my soul. To be able to give art to people is also a restorative thing. I love the idea. What we create when we're under some sort of duress can come out to be something beautiful and can also just touch someone.
This holiday fair, it's a place to go and meet old friends, make new ones, and see a wide variety of marvelous craft and art pieces. What will be available?
Out of the 13 artists, that would include people who do ceramics, jewelry, sculpture, mosaics, wood carving, paintings, and maybe a few more surprises thrown in.
Tell us about what you do with mosaics.
Well, there's a lot of breaking things. It begins with breaking things, using tools. It's a little hard on the hands. My favorite part is the design, putting the pieces together, finding the right color, the right tesserae, the right shape to go next to one another. I love the whole composition. It's kind of like putting a puzzle together. Putting the whole composition together is restorative, and it's a thoughtful process because you have to think of each piece. I don't love the grouting process, which is the final one. It's messy, it's dirty, it cuts your hands. Recently, I did a big peace sign, and I had blood all over it, honestly, when I was grouting it. I cleaned it off, and I thought, this is good. This piece speaks about peace. Having blood on it seemed a worthy thing.
I'm looking right now at one of your mosaics. It has a motto on it.
That one is a small mosaic with a bird on it, so I hand-fashioned a bird, and I put him on a little tile with a pine cone on it, and there's all these blues and greens in the background, stained glass. The motto is a Scottish proverb that says, rest and be thankful. I'd heard that in a sermon once. It was a story of the Scottish people, how they would walk up this high, high hill. When they would get to the top of the hill, there's a big rock, and on the rock it says, rest and be thankful. And I loved that, and I've made several mosaics with that. I think it's important for us to rest as well as be thankful. And to do those things together at the same time, it's kind of beautiful.
I'm trying to identify some of the materials in this relief.
There's the stained glass pieces, and there's pieces of broken stained glass that still has the metal parts in it. There's the tile that I put in there. I like to gather things that are of different shapes and sizes. I like found art, things that I find. I put a lot of rocks and stones in my work. I like to make a piece, like I've been making a lot of birds this year. I have owls sitting atop poles or on benches. What I make a tree, I design a tree out of broken pieces, and usually a word like courage or peace, for the bird to be speaking that word to us.
What is it about the bird that attracts you?
They've just always attracted me, ever since I was a little girl. I don't think I'm alone in that. I incorporate Emily Dickinson's quote about hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul.
Eva, you're a great lover of wildlife.
Yes, and I too love birds and often paint birds. Lately, though, I've been painting mostly wild animals with fur because I find that fur is a lot of fun to paint.
You were telling me about your encounters with red foxes.
I saw one a few years ago when I was visiting a friend. There was a red fox just strolling. He wasn't in a hurry, or she, toward the creek. It was early morning and the sun was shining on the red fur of the fox, and it was just so bright and special and eye-catching. It was one of those magical moments when we see a wild animal and just tingle with excitement.
There's something very reassuring about looking at this full-face view of a fox because it looks as if it's tame, as if it could go home with you. The eyes, of course, are so full of life.
That's the most important part to me. If I can get the eyes right, the rest just kind of falls into place. I like the full-face portrait. I think of these more as portraits than just wildlife paintings.
What else will you be showing?
I have some of my birds that I paint realistically, but I put them in what I call an unreal environment, basically just pen and ink line of the setting that the bird is in.
Is there something about the watercolor medium that you feel is particularly working for you?
I'm addicted to watercolor. Mm-hmm. I try other things and I always come back to it. I've been painting in watercolor since I was 4 years old, and I just absolutely love everything about it.
Lauren, can you give us a rundown once again on what people can expect coming to the holiday fair at the Kosas Studios, 356 East 2nd Avenue in Chico?
Beautiful ceramic artwork, paintings, glass jewelry, a sculptor who works with wood, lovely one-of-a-kind gifts. Saturday, 10 to 5, Sunday, 11 to 4.
Well, thank you so much. I'll be there.
And that's Weekend Showcase for this week. We'll be back next Friday at 3 o'clock. If you ever miss this program at its regular broadcast time, you can hear it online anytime after 3:30 Friday at mynspr.org. As always, we encourage you to enjoy the arts in the North State. For Weekend Showcase, I'm Tom Kinney. Weekend Showcase is a production of North State Public Radio.